Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
Say big at Menards and keep cool in the summer heat with a new window air conditioner from Denali Air. Quickly and efficiently cool your spaces with auto and eco modes to maximize performance and save on energy costs. Featuring three fan cooling speeds and a remote control, allowing you to cool your space from anywhere in the room. Save big money on Denali Air. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at Menards.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hi, this is Debbie Harry.
This is Chris Stiop-Blondie.
And you're listening to The Story Behind the Song on Consequence.
Welcome, listeners, to The Story Behind the Song. I'm your host, Peter Chatty of Deep Cuts Media. In this very special encore episode, I revisit one of my favorite artists and interviews of all time, the great Debbie Harry and Chris Stein from legendary group Blondie. I interviewed Debbie and Chris back in 2021 as COVID continued its rampage. Now, fast forward 4 years later, and Blondie will once again release new music and tour throughout the year. Exciting times. Blondie is a band that broke all the rules across their 5+ decades of creating music, bending music genres by infusing their punk roots with elements of pop, disco, new wave, reggae, and rap. But of all their signature songs, Rapture remains their most iconic. The band released it in 1981, and it fast became the first rap song to hit number one on the U.S. charts. But did you know that Rapture's original track was discarded and later used by Blondie to create a Christmas song? Yes, it's all true, and you'll hear Debbie and Chris discuss it all and their fascinating musical journey every step of the way. So take a listen as we take another dive deep into the story behind Blondie's most iconic song, Rapture, with the great Debbie Harry and Chris Stein. Chris and Debbie, how are you guys doing today?
Both
joining from New York City, I assume.
Yes.
It's an incredibly beautiful day today, unseasonably warm and sunny. And, you know, it's a gorgeous day. It's a great day for, you know, New York City. People will be out walking and riding bikes and, you know, walking along the riverbanks and everything. It's a gorgeous day.
Ah, great. It's a wonderful city. I was just there last weekend, actually. Great city. And just a little brief introduction that everybody knows about you guys is that one of the most iconic bands, over 40 million records worldwide, inducted into the Hall of Fame, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame years ago. And we all know the tunes. We all know Heart of Glass one way or another. The Tide is High and so many others. But what sets you all apart from just about everybody else is how versatile you are in terms of all the genres that you've covered throughout your career. So punk, new wave, pop, disco, and of course, rap as well. And that's the perfect segue where today we're going to be talking about Rapture, one of your most iconic songs of all time from the album Auto American. But also we're going to talk about Yuletide Throwdown, which is a hidden gem that was just recently uncovered. I guess Chris was saying floating around out there, but for most people, a new gem that is just was just released digitally and also on limited edition vinyl a few days back in early November. And these songs are related, correct?
Yes. Okay. It's almost the same thing.
It's pretty much the same root. It's the same basis. Same chord changes, I guess.
Well, no. Do you want to go into it? Are you ready?
Yeah, well, we might as well go into that, and then we can go into a little bit more of your backstory afterwards. But absolutely, talk to us about Rapture and Yuletide Throwdown, because they are intertwined. So this is a little bit different.
It's really simple. It's just we did when we first recorded Rapture, we decided it was too slow. So we did a second take that was faster. And that was it. So the slow take, the little bit faster version is what you hear as the song. And I had the 2-inch tape that I'd gotten a copy of, or maybe even the actual tape. And I brought it home. I had my own 24-track studio at that point. And I overdubbed on it and put Freddie and Debbie on. And so that's the slower version is what this Christmas song is.
Yeah, no, I was listening to it earlier today, and it's delightful. And so for everybody who's out there, you should check it out because it's a great holiday song, maybe even a new holiday classic. But as I was looking into things, that it was a little bit chicken and the egg. It wasn't clear to me which came first, but as you were saying, the Yuletide Throwdown actually...
Well, it was the vocals, the rap and stuff was recorded several years later after doing Rapture, maybe a good couple of years later down the pike.
Yeah.
So how did you think about that, since it was a slower track, the original track for Rapture, and then you shelved it for a little bit? So how did this all come back to you?
There was a UK magazine called Flexi Pop, which had the little plastic flexi disc, if anybody remembers those, in it. So I guess they may have approached me for doing some Christmas songs. And I had two other tracks I'd produced, one by this guy named Snooky Tate and another by the kid punk band called the Brattles. And the Brattles song was called Santa's Secret Agent, if I remember correctly. And those guys were actually all like 9 to 12 years old at the time. Yeah. And famously opened up for the Clash at Bonds in New York.
There's an interesting mix.
So the Brattles music is out there. It was funny, but I mean, they really played their own instruments and were doing the thing. And so these three tracks went on this little flexi disc, but it didn't flex. The magazine just fucking dropped the ball on it, and it didn't come out till February of the year it was released anyway.
For the next Christmas.
Yeah, it was just ironically funny.
Yeah.
And then it's been floating around. It's probably on YouTube and here and there, but it's never really gotten much attention.
So, Debbie, did you write the lyrics with Chris, or how did that all come about for Yuletide Throwdown?
Well, I think Freddie had a hand in it, right? Yeah.
It's Freddie's rap is just what he threw down.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Freddie even technically has any actual records out as such. You know, I don't know if he's ever recorded, but he's a good rapper and certainly a student of the form.
No, I don't think he does. And it seems pretty odd in today's world that he doesn't have.
Well, Freddie's like busy being the mayor.
Oh, I know.
I mean, he just like knows everybody in show business and everything, and does a lot of networking all the time.
Well, no, as I was listening to it, it's so wild to hear Rapture with the Christmas lyrics over it. And it's a great vibe for the holidays. So everybody, seriously, check it out, because it is a great vibe for the Christmas season.
Well, check it out is one of the lyrics in there. Right.
So this was, we'll talk about Yuletide Throwdown a little bit more, and then we'll get into Rapture itself. But Yuletide Throwdown, as I understand it, you found it, but it stopped floating around because you're collecting a box set. That's what you're compiling right now release at some point next year.
I had a garage full of tapes that we turned over and started having digitized and dealing with that stuff. So that was included in all that.
Did you find a lot of undiscovered gems?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of vaguely aware of pretty much all that's there.
Yeah,
there's a lot of stuff that hasn't been digitized. There's a few things I had kind of forgotten about. I don't know where the hell we got them. I don't know where that version of Moonlight Drive came from, if that was in my tapes or otherwise. But that was pretty interesting. We have a version of the, not even the whole song, just a fragment of the Doors' Moonlight Drive that we recorded probably while making the second album, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's in this stuff. I think that's in the box set.
And Debbie, do you remember recording that with Fab Five Freddy?
Well, yeah, I do. I think we did it up on 72nd Street, right, Chris?
Well, I think it was in the basement.
In the basement?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess that makes sense time-wise. Yeah.
No, I used to have this big loft in Tribeca.
Yeah.
Which I moved into before it was called Tribeca. And I had my own, I had a studio, 24-track, you know, analog situation. So I'm pretty sure we did it there. We could.
I don't know why I thought it was uptown, but in any case, it was your board, and that's how we did it. Yeah,
I'm sure you had a lot of fun while you were doing it. It certainly sounds that way.
Yeah.
I mean, look, you know, it's a Christmas song, a Christmas version of a song that is very much not Christmassy. So no. That's the beauty of it. And so I want to get into Rapture, because now getting into the depth of that and how that all came to be. First, that, and as I was saying at the beginning, Rapture was released on your fifth studio album, Auto American, which came out in late 1980, and Rapture was released early 1981. And Auto American is a pretty fascinating album itself, because there's so many genres that are within that one. And you have the atmospheric Europa as an example, which is, I like that song a lot. Just a little fun fact. Chris, I was telling you a little bit about my son who's at NYU right now. So he's in New York City, which gives me a great reason to come out to New York. But my daughter's in music, and Angels on the Balcony is an interesting song from that album. And is one of our family favorites. It's just, and so if we have a few moments, I want to ask you a couple of questions about that one too, because it's a haunting song. But it just shows kind of the eclecticism of this album. But let's get into Rapture a little bit. And first, give us the backstory of where you both were as Blondie at that time, and what led to, you know, your evolution as a band led to the framework for Rapture, and how that began, and then how it came to be.
It's kind of a combination of things. The main event was Freddie taking us up to the Bronx to see this rap event, which was in probably 77 or 78, I would imagine, you know. And it was just really an eye-opener and very exciting. And we got very carried away and enthusiastic about seeing all these kids, you know, finding their voice and doing this bit that they were doing. And you know, I was unaware that this sort of vital scene was going on at the same time as the downtown scene. So that was a kickoff. And then, of course, we had really been big fans of Chic. I loved Chic. And so the basic, you know, the bass line is kind of an homage to Chic. And also, of course, all the rap music at the time was only using a couple of samples, which, and one of them was, you know, Good Times by Chic and Love is the Drug. And a couple of things, but it was very limited. Good Times was what you heard over and over again.
I remember it well.
As a foundation for everything.
Yeah.
Now at Menards, save big money on everything for your next project. With the largest selection of concrete and mortar in stock, we have the right mix specially formulated for your project. View our entire selection of concrete and mortar mixes online or in-store and save big money. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Debbie, do you remember going out that, was it one pivotal like night where you both were there with Fab Five Freddy and you saw something that you felt was completely unique? Is that the way it kind of came to be in your mind?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, we had heard different things that were recorded. What was the label from Jersey?
Sugar Hill stuff.
Rapper's
Delight had been around. People heard that.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we weren't totally unfamiliar with rap, but we had never sort of been to a live, I don't know what you would call it, a rave of sorts. Yeah. You know, they were, you know, it was a freestyle rap thing. And, you know, they did the scratching using, as Chris said, you know, very, very often the same rhythm tracks behind, you know, pre-recorded stuff. And I guess there was a little bit of objection to that, you know, that whole process, but it wasn't, it never went to any great degree like it might have today. And, you know, we went up there to this live jam rave thing with all these kids at the Police Athletic League. Hmm. So they, you know, it was a community response, you know, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't sort of the danger zone in any way, shape or form. But it was, you know, as Chris said, you know, people finding their voice and saying things. And, you know, some of it was bravado. Some of it was social. Other all kinds of, you know, topics and subject matters. And, you know, but just vital, you know, just full of enthusiasm and drama. And it really made an impression on us. And we went back home and I know we were sitting there and I think the TV was on and Chris said, I think we should do a rap song and call it Rapture. And I said, oh, okay, great. That sounds good.
Pretty clever.
So we did. Excuse me. And, you know, I think the, I don't know, it seemed like the importance of the whole thing, you know, was that, you know, people were saying things that, you know, hadn't been said the way they were saying them. And also that it was a form of music, you know, it was a new twist. It was a new exciting, you know, approach. And I think our contribution to that was that, you know, Chris wrote music. So Rapture is one of the first, if not the first rap song, excuse me, that has its own music and it has its own song. It's not something lifted from Chic or, you know, anywhere else. It's a complete entity of its own. And I think after that, it sort of became, you know, the norm, you know, that rappers would actually, you know, cooperate with a songwriter or somebody like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, it was the first number one rap song to hit the U.S. charts. And so it's revolutionary. And I want to ask you about the impact and just kind of the reaction from the rap community. But so when you first experienced that event, did you feel at the time that that was something revolutionary and would change, would it be a lasting new form of music?
Yeah. And I, frequently tell the story of speaking to a lot of insider record company people at the time in the next couple of years. And I think, you know, like 99% of these guys saying it was a fad and it was going to go away. And, you know, now we're
there's the shocker.
Yeah. But, you know, yeah. But now we're, you know, we're almost 50 years into it.
And I didn't really pay that much attention to that because, you know, they, I think they said that about punk too.
About everything.
You know,
and like,
it seemed like, you know, almost like folk music to me.
Yeah.
You know, mentally, it took the position of folk music in the Black community and in terms of, you know, R&B, I suppose.
Yeah.
And it was very much like deconstructivist. It was about breaking down these existing forms and putting them back together, which was very much what punk was about, and maybe reggae. So all of these kind of outsider forms of music were very much about, you know, redoing existing things, which I thought was very exciting.
Well, you know that you have a new form of music that's going to last when the record label guys say it's not going to, yeah, this isn't going to last, that it's a fad.
That's probably a good...
Well, I don't know, you know, I don't know, I don't want to slam record company guys completely because I know some have actual, you know, a great deal of vision.
Of course.
And, you know, have really been helpful to artists and to music. But unfortunately, it's not always the case.
So after you had that experience, how long thereafter did you guys sit down and start writing?
And you had that
aha moment with the, you know, the title Rapture, and you decided to write that song. Was that?
Yeah, probably probably a while. It was when we got together to do the next record, that you know, on our American record. So it was probably a couple of years after going to that event. I still can't really pin the event itself down. I've talked to Freddie about it, trying to figure out the year. You know, he says 78. I mean, 77, 78, so it might have been around then. It was before Wild Style. I'm not sure what year Wild Style came out, so it was a little before that, too.
And did you, when you sat down, sounds like it was a plan to sit down and actually write a rap song, and you had the title Rapture. So which came first? Was it the music, or was it
the bass line?
The bass line.
The beat and the bass line came first. And then that's doubled with a guitar on the track, playing just exactly the same thing. And that is very much a Bernard Edwards homage. Yeah, the Good Times bass line is so iconic.
Yeah.
That Bernard plays. So
yeah,
it was a reference to that.
So once you had the bass line, what was the process after that? And how quickly did it come together? And tell us about the lyric process as well.
Well, I guess, you know, I worked up that melody that is the verses. I mean, the verse chorus is pretty closely linked there. And then we just threw down a lot of this crazy stuff. I think I kind of remember writing some of that.
Chris, I think Chris wrote the rap. Initially,
I
added to it, you know, yeah. To, but it was, you know, the man from Mars is Chris's buddy, actually.
Yeah, all that.
Well, when you say that it was Chris's buddy, so what does that mean?
Oh, well, you know, I mean, he's a sci-fi, you know, aficionado. I think that's one of the things that we both really appreciated. We had the Attack of the Giant Ants on the first album. And, you know, so I've always felt that there was a sort of kinship between these things. And it also is, you know, a little bit silly. And but yet the music itself, the drive is strong behind it. It's not like, do-do-do-do-do. It's, you know, it captures your attention because you know, it's not predictable. You know, this is a story that's you're in the club and you're dancing and it's hot and you're close and it's all of this sort of semi-romantic, lovely stuff. And then all of a sudden, you know, Fab Five Ready, you know, and we're jumping from the DJ to outer space. It's kind of, you know, pretty exciting.
Did you know that you had something?
Well, yeah, I absolutely felt it was special. And I think the track was gorgeous. And, you know, it was a lot of fun. I mean, if a track that's, it was so interesting. And, you know, one of the things that sort of signaled me in particular that we had something was that Mike Chapman got very excited. And he didn't know, you know, he was sort of cautious. He didn't really know what we were doing or where we were going. And, you know, so if we got one thing that was the least bit right, he would say, "Hey, we got it." So, you know, a lot of the song was put together, you know, almost quickly, you know, compared to some of the other tracks that were more laborious, you know.
So, Debbie, because you haven't been able to tour for quite some time. How have you been able to stay sane and stay close to your fans and do all the things you want to do creatively?
Well, it's not, I don't feel particularly sane, and I sometimes wonder about that, but, you know, it would be a lot better if we were playing music and, you know, doing what we do, but in some ways, I guess, you know, it's good to sort of have to break it down and you know, take it back and, yeah, you know, put the pieces together. I am always, you know, looking for some inspiration, and I keep lots of notes about my ideas. And so, I mean, that's an ongoing process of that, you know, I seem to be doing that naturally. But, you know, performance wise, I said recently to my manager, Tommy, that I'm addicted to applause. And, you know, basically I'm an applause junkie. And would you mind?
Yes, I will. I've applauded you several times at several concerts. So absolutely. Yeah.
Well, you know how it is. I mean, for anybody who's out of work or lost their job during this pandemic, it's unbelievable. It's tragic and unbelievable and scary, you know. I don't feel especially scared because I'm an established artist, but I can imagine for, you know, a newer artist or a younger band, wow, it's, what do you do? Where do you go? How do you keep going?
Yeah, it's tough. I speak to a lot of different people and it's very hard. And so they try to find all new ways to engage and use it productively. But I want to just close things up with Rapture. And then, Debbie, what you were talking about, though, in terms of the time of the pandemic and how you've been able to take these crazy times and turn them into something that's a creative outlet for you. I want to get to that too, because you released a book and Chris was saying that he's working on a book as well, and you have a number of projects coming out. But so Chris, the lyrics one more time, just so I understand a little bit more from your perspective for Rapture, is that something that flowed really quickly for you?
It was pretty much just it's just the concept of rhyming the end of the phrase and filling in the earlier part of the phrase, making it a little coherent, and just has this little storyline.
I mean, there's one of my favorite parts is at the very end when and now he only eats guitars, and then you have that guitar riff that's really hard.
I think the orchestration came in a little bit later. I know that we had, you know, like this really great groove, and you know, that's very important, essential, and
I recently picked out of some of the syncopation. There's some fantastic percussion, I think, you know, some like tapping sticks out of It's, there's a lot of really great stuff mixed in there with the drum tracks.
Yeah, for sure. And the first, it's the first video featuring rap that was on MTV also too. So there's, you know, all these different things that came out of Rapture was just really revolutionary. And then to at least for those of us who are, who know the song really well, and to discover for the first time that there is this holiday version of it, this Christmas version, is great. So Debbie, what have you been able to do just from a creative standpoint? Have there been some positives in that respect?
Well, we're starting up now. You know, it's loosening up. Everybody was in shock and, what do we do? What's going to happen? Is there ever going to be an end to this thing? And we're coming out of it. And so Chris and I and Matt Katz-Bowen have been sort of putting our heads together. We have a long list of material that we're considering. And, we're just looking to have a space, you know, create a period of time that we can just knock it out, you know.
Your 12th album you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What kind of timing do you think that's going to be for everybody out there?
Oh, as far as the audience, people hearing it, probably not, I would say 2023, but
yeah,
with a little luck, it could come out. I mean, the idea would be to, you know, put something out online before, you know, during 2022. I honestly don't think we won't get to really recording anything now.
Yeah. I mean, look, touring, you have what just released Yuletide Throwdown. You have a soundtrack that's out, I believe, Blondie, I'm going to mispronounce this, Viva en la Habana. So yes, it's a short film of a 2019 live performance in Havana.
It's Javier.
Oh,
Javier. Yeah. It's a to live.
How was that experience in Havana?
Well, all I can say is that I wish that it had been longer.
Mm.
And I was really excited with the additions that the Cuban musicians, you know, played. They really, it just, you know, the feel of the percussion was elevated, and it was pretty fantastic. I don't know. I guess I'm spoiled, you know, because now we've had music around for so many years that, you know, audiences around the world, it's always surprising. But then again, it's not surprising, because the same thing happens, you know, for us, that we hear a lot of music. And so, you know, the audience was singing along and acting just like anywhere else, practically. It was a remarkable event and something that, you know, we had always wanted to do. And Chris was one of the people who, you know, he was one of the guys who really wanted this to happen. And he and Tommy really cooked it up. We did this cultural exchange. I don't know what else to say about it, except that it happened. And I, you know, I wish that, you know, we had been there longer, and that, you know, we could have, I wanted to do a free concert, and, you know, we couldn't quite pull that off. It's not an economic system that's easy to negotiate.
Mm.
So, you know, we did somehow pull it off.
Well, and consistent with everything that we kind of started with, which is multi-genre, taking different elements, reimagining it, creating it your own. That's something that you both and the band, that's what you're known for. And what's so unique about Blondie is that you do cross all these genres. And from an artist perspective, it's you're a true artist that way, because there aren't that many who would like bring it all together and tie it all together. And I don't want to take too much of your time, but I want to just really quickly go back to kind of the beginning of, so Debbie, I'll start with you in terms of, as a young girl growing up, did, and I know a little bit about the story, but I want to hear it from you. As growing up, when did you first realize that you could sing and that you felt comfortable singing and that it is something that you wanted to do?
I think it was just second nature. I didn't really think about it as a child. I just liked doing it. And, you know, music is a transportation for me. I can really, as the jazz musicians say, I can go off. Well, I do.
Yes, you can.
Yeah. And in a good way, you know. And so I think that that's something that, you know, Chris and I share, you know, each in our own way. But, you know, music is, I don't know, it's a cure for so many things for people. And I don't know, I always, after a certain point, I actually considered that, oh God, this would be a really great way to, you know, to live. But I mean, as a kid, I just had my head in the radio and I was just listening to, you know, all kinds of music. And that's one of the things I've always said, that, you know, growing up in the metropolitan area of New York City and having all of these different radio shows to listen to was a huge blessing.
And did you always feel comfortable singing in front of others?
No. I think I started in choirs, in groups, but I did fool around with a couple of little side things. You know, I had this group called the Fifth Grade Girls Club, and you know, we would sit around and we would try to sing like early Platters songs and stuff like that, and Harbor Lights and I don't know, just really nice R&B songs. So, but I think even before that, you know, listening to the radio was a major importance.
And Chris, when did you first pick up the guitar and start playing and writing songs and, you know, just evolving?
Like 1962, I got my first guitar when I was 12. So just, you know, there was always this attraction for the electric guitar thing, even a little bit before the Beatles, before all that stuff hit in America. I was just had this fascination with the physicality of the electric guitar. I would see these older guys fooling around with them, you know, or I would hear it at night walking down the streets in Brooklyn.
And so, did you... Yeah. Did you, is that something that you had this fascination and you felt early on that this is what I wanted to do?
I was always messing around with my friends and doing like little band situations and jamming constantly all through my teenage years. So I don't know if I thought of it, you know, the model for musicians and rock musicians has changed so much now.
Yeah. Yeah. I love asking this question and then we'll wrap it up. But Chris, if you didn't become a professional musician and this becoming your life, what do you think you would have done? Like what else interested you that you could have done as an adult?
Well, I was always in some form of the arts. I was always doing photography, graphics. But, you know, nowadays, after I watch so much crime TV, I think I would want to be a policeman. But I think that's my, I don't know if that ever occurred to me back when I was a kid.
CSI Blondie.
CSI Blondie?
Yes.
Well,
CSI.
You know, honestly, Chris, this is the first time I've ever heard you say that. This is outrageous.
I'm saying it on occasion. I mean, I like to, you know.
I don't know. I know you like guns, but I mean, gee.
Yeah, the whole murder detective thing is attractive, you know? That's what I say.
And Debbie, how about you? What do you think that you'd be doing if you weren't leading and a singer for a band?
I always said, you know, I knew that I would be a performer of some sort. Although I was terribly shy. I don't know how I guess got over it because, you know, I wanted to or I had to. I probably would have gone into some kind of theater, something like that.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing to hear that you were incredibly shy. That's not what you would expect. So you clearly overcame it, which is wonderful for everybody out there. And then what brought you two together? How did you meet each other?
I went to this show, which was the first show of this band called The Stilettos, which was a girl trio. And then that was it. And I was very taken with Debbie and we, you know, I joined their band shortly thereafter.
And then you formed, you two left that band and formed Blondie?
Yeah, about 2 years later, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay. Got you. Well, incredible. Incredible career. And one final question. What is the... When you think about back on all that you've done, is there any particular moment that stands out to you as being just one of those moments where it's just, it's incredible? You've had so many incredible moments, but something, some experience that really stands out.
Well, you know, there's a lot of that stuff. That's why I wrote that book. But I mean, recently, over the last 10 years doing some of those huge, massive concerts like Glastonbury and Hyde Park in London with, you know, 100,000 people is pretty exciting. All that stuff. I mean, Some of those guys just, you know, Mick and those guys do that all the time, but for us, it was a big deal.
So. I think one of the moments that I remember very explicitly was quite beautiful. And, I felt it was, a real indication of Blondie's future. Well, we played in Bethesda Fountain in Central Park on New Year's Eve. And it was just a beautiful night. It was so miserably cold and wet.
That was 1974, though, I guess. Or 70. I think that was 1974 to 5.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we just had the small band. We just had... what was it, four pieces?
Yeah, whatever it was.
Yeah, it was a small band, small version of Blondie. And it was freezing, sleeting, cold, miserable, miserable night. And we were playing outdoors on this little platform set up near Bethesda Fountain.
It was in the fountain,
yeah.
It was in the fountain,
and, yeah. And... as we were playing, we learned that song "Time Is Tight" by Booker T, and which is a beautiful, great song. But it's really instrumental. I don't know what I was doing. I probably just humming along, or I don't know, stamping my feet, trying to keep warm. And all of a sudden, these huge, gigantic hands—you know, people dressed up—it
was the Bread and Puppet Theater.
Oh, the Bread and Puppet Theater, right.
Which is an old radical performance group that goes way back to the 60s.
Yeah, yeah. And they came marching down those gigantic those very beautiful and dramatic, elegant staircase from the level of Central Park down into the Bethesda Fountain area. It was just beautiful with all the snow falling and, I don't know, we actually got paid. I think that was probably one of the reasons that stood out in my mind.
We got like $500. That was like one of the highest things we ever got paid at that point.
Right.
Yeah.
From the city, the Parks Department paid them. A month later, It took fucking months for them to actually
But you got it.
Yeah, we got it. Yeah.
Well, that's the beauty of music, that you have the one of the largest events is a great moment, of course, and then you have one of the smallest events in your career, which is one of the great moments. And it's that's the magic of these experiences. Listen, I really appreciate you joining Story Behind the Song, and discussing both Rapture and the reimagined version of Rapture, which just was re-released because it's been out for a long time, but none of us really knew about it. Yuletide Throwdown, a new holiday classic. I urge everybody to do that. Lots of things are coming up, with a box set coming in 2022. Sounds like you're working on a new album, which is wonderful. We'll see that in the future. Chris, you have your memoirs that are coming up. Debbie, your great autobiography is out in the stores, and lots of different projects. But again, Debbie Harry, Chris Dine, Blondie, and thank you so much for joining Story Behind the Song. That was Debbie Harry and Chris Dine of legendary band Blondie sharing their story behind their most iconic track, Rapture, the first song to hit number one on the charts. You can catch new music from Blondie and see them on tour later this year. They always bring it on every show, even after 50 years. Remarkable. I'm your host, Peter Chatti of Deep Cuts Media. You can find me at deepcutsmedia.com. Check out all the cool things we do. And if you like my show, please rate it, follow it, and share it with your friends, family, and other music fans like you. New and classic episodes come to you every Monday morning. And make sure to check out all the cool Story Behind the Song merch, including the poster and puzzle I have in my studio in the Consequence merch store at shop.consequence.net. Be sure to click on the new release tab to find it. And follow the Consequence Podcast Network to keep up to date with all our series at consequence.net/consequence-podcast-network. And as always, thanks for listening to the Story Behind the Song.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.